True Crime New Zealand exists as a record of true events. Special attention is paid to be as respectful as possible to everyone involved, in particular the victims. We at True Crime NZ do not intend disrespect to any victims involved with these crimes. This podcast often deals with confronting and disturbing events and may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. On the 15th of May 1920, Whanganui citizens were shocked by a crime that involved their elected mayor. The crime was reported on later in the New Zealand Truth newspaper. The evidence which was adduced makes the case one of the most sensational in the annals of the New Zealand courts. Indeed, it would be hard to imagine a more extraordinary sequence of happenings. Charles Mackay in his public business life was a popular and successful man, but there was another and hideous side to his nature, a Jekyll as well as a Hyde to his character. And Walter Darcy Cresswell, a returned soldier, unmasked the debonair mayor and discovered him to be another Oscar Wilde, morally unclean, a pursuer of perverted and putrid pleasures. Walter Darcy Cresswell was born on the 22nd of January 1986. The third child to married couple Walter and Hannah Cresswell in Christchurch, New Zealand. The Creswells were well established in New Zealand, having arrived in Canterbury 46 years earlier. Growing up, he became known by his middle name, Darcy. Darcy attended Elmwood Primary School before attending Christ College in his later teen years. After leaving school, Walter began working in the architectural sector. He worked for the firm Collins & Harman for a couple of years before travelling to London, England to continue his architectural studies. However, due to the outbreak of the Great War in 1914, Darcy enlisted as a private in the Middlesex Military Regiment in 1915. Darcy was sent to the front and was eventually wounded in combat in 1916 in France. After Darcy recuperated from his injuries, he joined the Corps of New Zealand Engineers in 1917. He served in the New Zealand military until the end of the war, before eventually returning to New Zealand in 1919. Darcy rejoined his family, now residing in Timaru in the Canterbury region. By this time, Darcy's sexuality was a topic of discussion with those who knew him. His attitude was described as being ambivalent towards people of the opposite sex. In fact, he was known to have had homosexual relationships. Homosexuality in the early 1900s was considered to be an unnatural offence and was regulated by the 1893 Criminal Code, Crimes Against Morality. Everyone is liable to imprisonment with hard labour for life and, according to his age, to be flogged or whipped once, twice or thrice. Those who commit buggery either with a human being or with any other living creature. Darcy also had a creative and artistic side that only bloomed after the war. Upon returning to New Zealand, Darcy was inspired to write and took up writing poetry. Plant thou in a poet's heart one dear word or look or deed. As the oak excels its seed, so it will increase with art. Oh, that dark and holy ground, didst thou drop one silent tear? In the season of the year, something mighty will be found. The Poet's Heart by Walter Darcy Cresswell. Darcy later wrote in his autobiography about his time post-World War I and returning to New Zealand. When I reached home, I made no secret of what my ambitions were, but surprised all who knew me, and my health being poor and no decision as to what profession I should adopt being required of me for over a year, I visited such parts of New Zealand as I had never seen to improve my health and to advance my design of founding my poetry on the traditions, customs, and scenery of my native land. I was already resolved on returning to England soon after. Without being committed to any profession, except perhaps authorship, and to this only in the vaguest terms. But those who had known me longest thought my pretensions absurd. That I might succeed as a writer of prose they did not deny, indeed they urged me to develop this gift however I might, and write poetry in my spare time, and no doubt God created the universe in his spare time, at least in 6 days, and they may have been thinking of that. Poets at any rate have no spare time, and idleness, that is the curse of other men, is the nurse of poets. On the 10th of May 1920, Darcy travelled to the small town of Whanganui to visit relatives. The next day, Darcy travelled with his cousin to the horse races in Hawera, 90 kilometres northwest of Whanganui. They returned to Whanganui the next day. The following evening, the 13th of May 1920, Darcy was introduced to the mayor of Whanganui, Charles Mackey. Charles Evan Mackey was born in the South Island town of Nelson on the 29th of June 1875, son to Joseph and Jessie Mackey. Charles was from a middle-class background. His father was a high school mathematics teacher, and he eventually became the headmaster of Wellington College in 1891. Charles was considered an intelligent and gifted individual, graduating from Canterbury College in 1900 with a Bachelor of Arts and a Bachelor of Laws. After graduating, Charles became a lawyer and established a law firm in the North Island city of Whanganui. Charles met a woman by the name of Isabel Duncan in the River City and eventually married her on the 20th of January 1904. Isabel was from a wealthy and well-known family in Whanganui. This raised Charles's stature in the community even further. Charles and Isabel produced 3 children in the succeeding years. Charles would leverage his newfound celebrity to run for local office. He was elected to the Whanganui Borough Council in November 1905 before being elected mayor of Whanganui the following year in 1906. Charles was a popular mayor, responsible for much of the town's growth over the next decade. He was instrumental in improving the town's infrastructure, including its roads, water supply, and fire services. Charles was also responsible for the erection of the Dublin Street Bridge and the Whanganui Sargent Art Gallery. Charles's popularity suffered somewhat due to him not serving in World War I, and he was briefly out of office from 1913 to 1915. Charles's non-veteran status led to an open feud with the Whanganui Retired Soldiers Association, RSA. The conflict came to a head during a visit from the Prince of Wales on the 3rd of May 1928. The RSA wanted to hold their own welcoming ceremony separate from the mayor's. Due to this hostility, Charles feared for his safety and began carrying a revolver. Things became even more complicated for Charles when he was introduced to a young poet who was visiting Whanganui from Timaru. On the 13th of May 1920, Charles Mackey met the young man dubbed Walter Darcy Creswell. They apparently got along so well, Charles invited him out that night for dinner at a hotel. This event apparently went so salubriously that Charles invited Darcy out once more the next night, this time to the art gallery. Friday, the evening of the 14th of May 1920. Charles and Darcy met at the Whanganui Art Gallery. Charles used his private key to get in. What happened inside can only be speculated on. But presumably the twosome wandered the exhibits before probably spending some time observing the gallery's pride and joy, a marble reproduction of the famous statue, The Wrestlers, depicting 2 nude Greek males in the act of grappling. Once the twosome had seen the sights, Charles invited Darcy back to his office on Ridgeway Street, and according to Darcy, Charles then showed him his private collection of nude female photographs. Darcy also led the mayor on, and there were rumors that Charles had come on to the poet. At this point, Darcy began blackmailing the Whanganui mayor, demanding that he resign from his position or he would be outed as being a pervert. It was at this point the mayor began pleading with Darcy for mercy before Charles asked Darcy to think his decision over and suggested they reconvene the next morning. The next morning, the 15th of May 1920, Darcy arrived at the mayor's office around 9:30 a.m. Much of the morning was spent with Charles pleading Darcy for clemency, before eventually Charles agreed to sign a letter saying he would resign his mayoralty in 1 month. As the meeting was wrapping up, Charles led Darcy to the door, before suddenly pulling out a revolver and pointing it at him. "This is for you," he uttered, before pulling the trigger. The gun discharged and the bullet entered Darcy's chest. Charles, at this point, believing Darcy to be dead, placed a revolver in the hand of Darcy, apparently trying to stage the scene to look like a suicide. As Charles turned to leave, Darcy rose, pointing the revolver at him. Charles quickly slammed the door. Darcy tried the door, but it was locked. He looked around the room, pondering his next move. Darcy grabbed a nearby chair and flung it at the office window, smashing it. Darcy put his head out the window and yelled, "Help! I've discovered a scandal!" At this point, the mayor rushed back into the room and asked for Darcy to shoot him. Darcy aimed the revolver at him. A short moment passed before Charles rushed at Darcy. Darcy fired off the remaining bullets in the chamber, but missed the charging mayor. Soon after, the passerbyers off the street rushed in. Darcy lost consciousness moments later, uttering the words, "The mayor shot me." He was rushed to hospital. When the police showed up, Charles Mackey tried to tell him he was only showing Darcy the gun when it discharged by accident. Confused, the police asked, "What about the chair?" "What chair?" Charles replied. The police directed his attention to the chair that shattered the window, now lying in the middle of Ridgeway Street. Charles had no answer. Charles was arrested and charged with attempted murder. Darcy recovered relatively quickly from his injuries, considering the bullet was never recovered from his lung. Darcy gave a statement to the police saying he was shot by Charles Mackey when Darcy had discovered a certain disgusting feature about the Whanganui mayor. "I am a returned soldier, 24 years of age, and reside with my parents at Timaru in the South Island. I have done no work since I returned from the war. I came to Whanganui on Monday last, May 10th, and met Mr. Mackey on that date. I met him at dinner at Siobhan's hotel that night. I had gone there with my cousin at Mackey's invitation. Nothing abnormal occurred while at dinner. My cousin and myself went to the Harara races on May 11th and returned to Whanganui the following evening. I met Mr. Mackey on the Thursday and asked him to come to dinner at the Rutland Hotel that night with my cousin and myself. Mr. Mackey kept the appointment, but nothing took place while we were at the hotel, and I had not said anything to Mr. Mackey that would offend him. On the Thursday evening, Mr. Mackey invited me to go to the art gallery with him on the following afternoon. I accepted his invitation, as I wanted to know more about Mr. Mackey. On the Friday afternoon, about 4 p.m, I met Mr. Mackey at his office on Ridgeway Street. We went to the Whanganui Club in St. Hill Street and had a cup of tea. From there, we went to the art gallery. Mr. Mackey unlocked the door as he had the keys, and then we had a look through the building. When we left the art gallery, we went back to Mackey's office, and while there, I discovered a certain disgusting feature in Mr. Mackey's character. I purposely encouraged him to display the qualities in his nature, which I expected. He also showed me several photographs of nude women. On making that discovery, I told him I had led him on purpose to make sure of his dirty intentions, and I told him also, amongst a lot of other candid things, that he must resign the mayoralty at once. He then pleaded for mercy, asked me to think it over for the night and come to see him the next morning and let him know my decision. I stayed at the Rutland Hotel on Friday night, and that night I decided he must resign the mayoralty in a week's time. I called on him at 9:30 a.m. at his office, and the whole morning was spent by him in pleading with me, on account of his wife and family, not to force him to resign. I, however, was quite determined that he should resign, even though he threatened to commit suicide. I did not believe that he had the courage to carry out his threat. At my suggestion, and partly at my dictation, Mackie wrote a letter to my cousin, and I saw it posted on that Saturday morning. I did not believe Mackie when he said his wife was dependent on the £200 he got from his being mayor. I was very anxious to be just and to do nothing cruel for his family's sake. After useless talking and long silence, he asked me to come round to the club and try and reconsider my decision over a cup of tea. As I could not stand being in his office much longer and was very knocked up, I consented and we went round. Here, he became very earnest about his decision to commit suicide and the absolute impossibility of his resigning the mayoralty. He told me he was suffering from a complaint which made it impossible for him to control his passions, and said that his doctor could satisfy me in that respect. He rang up his doctor 2 or 3 times, but he was out. Nothing more happened, and Mackie then pleaded with me to come to his office. I think I was very foolish not to have left him, but I was anxious to be quite just to him. I had promised to say nothing about what I had discovered if he would resign at the end of the week. I took a more determined stand, being very tired, and threatened that if he did not immediately give me a letter promising to resign at the end of the week, I would at once wire to my dad in Timber Road to come up, as I felt it was too much of a strain on me alone. He seemed so terribly upset that I then extended the time for a fortnight. He implored me for a month's time and spoke a lot about his wife and family, and I was quite firm about the fortnight. He then asked for a few minutes alone to clear his head or something of the sort. He was away a few minutes and then came back and said, "Criswell, give me a month and I will sign a letter straight away." And he came over to his table and wrote a letter promising to resign the mayoralty a month from that date and put it in a long envelope. We then arranged that it should be addressed to me at the GPO and registered, and I promised to let it be there till the month was up. So he put it in his pocket and we walked towards the door, Mackie leading the way. Before reaching the door, Mackie suddenly turned round and I found that he had a revolver pointed at my chest. We were only a foot or two apart and I think he said, "This is for you," but I am not positive. Then he fired almost immediately, and before I could recover from my amazement, I felt the bullet enter my right breast and I fell down. He stood where he was and looked at me, and then came over and thrust the revolver into my right hand. Immediately I got the revolver, I rose to my feet, and I kept him covered. He looked very surprised and wild and then ran through another door and either locked it or held the handle against me. I did not wait but ran back into Mackie's office fronting Ridgeway Street and threw a chair through the window to bring assistance. And then I called out through the smashed window to some chaps in the street to come up. Then Mackie, evidently hearing my calls for help and thinking he could not escape, came back and asked me to shoot him. Then he rushed me and I kept the revolver pointed clear and pulled all the shots off, and the next thing I can remember, I was running down the stairs and telling someone that Mackie had shot me. I heard Mackie say over the stairs that he had shot me by accident. I don't remember much more. This statement was taken to Charles Mackie in the presence of his lawyer, Mr. Treadwell. Charles read over the statement with his lawyer. After 20 minutes, the police were called back in. The police were informed that Charles had read over the statement and had endorsed its contents. I have read the above statement, and so far as it relates to my own act and deed, I admit the statement to be substantially true. On the 28th of May 1920, Charles Mackie, the mayor of Whanganui, appeared in the Whanganui courthouse. When asked how he pled to the crime of attempted murder of Walter Darcy Criswell, Charles quietly declared, "I plead guilty." Charles Mackie's lawyers presented evidence from his doctor that Charles was treated for homosexual monomania in 1914. This treatment was most likely hypnosis. This marked the first time homosexual was used publicly in New Zealand. This defense was used to try and explain Charles's actions, as he had a nervous disorder, which homosexuality was seen as. However, the defense did not work, and Charles Mackay was sentenced to 15 years hard labour in Mount Eden Prison. Post the Whanganui Affair in April 1921, Walter Darcy Creswell left New Zealand once more for England. Darcy lived a nomadic lifestyle for the next 4 years, wandering through Europe, taking on journalism work to feed himself while he continued to work on his poems. In August of 1925, Darcy surprised those who knew him by marrying a young lady named Emily Dreda Dacey in London, England. The marriage produced one son before it ended in early 1926. Darcy continued to work on his poetry. In 1930, he released a collection of poems dubbed The Poet's Progress. The book had modest success and he followed it up the following year with another book of poetry. Darcy returned to New Zealand in 1931 and stayed for 7 years. During this time, he continued to work on his poetry and began writing his autobiography. Darcy returned to England in 1938 and worked as a journalist for the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC. Darcy Creswell's autobiography was released the following year, dubbed Present Without Leave. Darcy continued working on his poetry for the next couple of decades, finding some success and releasing many collections of his work. From 1950 to 1960, Darcy worked as a night watchman at the historic Somerset House. This occupation allowed him the time he needed to work on his real passion, writing poems. However, his life came to an abrupt halt on the 20th of February 1960, when Walter Darcy Creswell was found dead in his home. The cause of death was found to be carbon monoxide poisoning. The death was determined to be accidental, but the circumstances surrounding his death still remain mysterious. In the years subsequent to the Whanganui Affair, the town tried to erase Charles Mackay from their history, destroying his mayoral portrait, changing the name of the street named after him, and sanding his name off the foundation stone at the art gallery. Charles's wife divorced him before changing her name to distance herself from his sordid crimes. Charles Mackay was erased from Whanganui's history. Charles served 6 years of his 15-year sentence and was released in August 1926. Charles was released on the condition he left the country for England. Charles's sister escorted him to England and helped him get work in the new land. By 1928, Charles was working for the United Kingdom Sunday Express newspaper as a reporter. In mid-1928, Charles was sent to Berlin, Germany to cover the upcoming May Day protests. Earlier in the year, the German Social Democratic Party had emerged with the largest number of seats in the federal election. This upset supporters of the Communist Party of Germany. The communist-affiliated newspapers urged their supporters to take the streets in protest of the election result. The protests went ahead on the 1st of May 1928, May Day. Charles Mackay was there to observe and report for the Sunday Express. Charles wandered around and ended up with a group of communist protesters. While Charles was following the group around, they ended up being confronted by police outside of a clothing store. The communist supporters began yelling at the German police. Things apparently got out of hand, and the police opened fire on the group. Charles Mackay was hit by a passing bullet and died shortly after. Charles Mackay was buried in a cemetery in Berlin. The grave has since been reused, and another coffin lays on top of Charles's final resting spot, a somewhat appropriate ending for Whanganui's forgotten mayor. Charles Mackey's death was reported on sporadically in Whanganui newspapers, but most of the town's citizens, since he was expunged from the town's history, had forgotten about the once popular mayor. Charles's name wouldn't be reintroduced to Whanganui until 1985, when his name was finally reinstated on the foundation stone at the Whanganui Sargent Art Gallery, due to the efforts of homosexual rights advocates in Whanganui. Ultimately, the story of Walter Darcy Criswell and Charles Mackey is one of the wildest and most sordid scandals Whanganui ever saw. Neither man spoke of the crime again, so we only have Darcy's statement of what happened that day. It is widely considered today that Darcy schemed with his cousin to get Charles ousted from his position as mayor. The motivation of Darcy's cousin is unknown, but it is speculated that he may have been involved with the Whanganui RSA and their long-standing grudge with Charles. The Whanganui affair serves as a testament to a time more reserved and conservative than today, a time when systematic homophobia was written into the laws of our society, when being a homosexual wasn't just frowned upon, but illegal. It wouldn't be until 1986, when the Homosexual Law Reform Act was passed, that the state would recognize homosexuality as a legitimate sexual choice, when the act finally decriminalized male homosexuality. Then in 1993, the New Zealand Human Rights Act was passed, creating anti-discrimination laws against homosexual men and women, finally giving equal rights to those who were attracted to the same sex. However, it is interesting to look at this crime through the lens of 2020 and observe a man, a mayor, so ashamed of who he was, he was willing to murder to keep it hidden. The Crimes Against Morality Act led newspapers at the time to describe Charles's character and the role he played in the Whanganui affair as morally unclean and a pursuer of perverted and putrid pleasures. It is interesting to ponder how different the lives of Darcy Criswell and Charles Mackey would have been if they had lived post the 1993 New Zealand Human Rights Act. Would Charles have acted the same, so desperately? I guess we can only wonder and hope that today, in a country with less systematic homophobia, the Whanganui affair would have ended less hopelessly, less destructively, less wickedly. This is part two of a three-part look into crime in Whanganui. Join us next time as we jump forward in time to the 1990s to cover one of Whanganui's darkest days. Until then, stay safe, my friends. Peace. Visit truecrimenz.com for additional information on this case, including a transcript of this episode with supporting pictures, sources, and credits.